Hey, welcome back. It's time for another episode of Driven by Design, the only show that shows you the future of automotive design, with our design-driven designer, Brian Thompson. Hey, Brian.
Howdy, howdy. This is going to be part two today. I'm very excited because it's my brother.
Yeah, well, you got to give him a second part here. You know, it sounds like you were kind of, you was a little kid, you just kind of dragged him along when he was little. He wants to hang out with his brother here.
Yeah, we have a pretty good relationship. Hey, bro.
Hey.
So introduce yourself again, brother, here. What's your name and what do you do?
I am Chad Thompson, and I am a union millwright rebuilding power plants, industrial mechanics. And then in my spare time and kind of as a passion, I build mostly motorcycles with the end goal being hot rod.
Really exotic stuff. That's what we talked about. We did an episode with you earlier. Go back into the catalog and listen to that one where we laid out his... both of their interest in power and in vehicles, and how Brian designs stuff and you build it, and how different that is as an experience. And then we just started to touch into this world of motorcycles. Brian's talked a lot about the future of automotive design. As he says over and over again, I can't tell you what I'm designing, folks, but none of them have wheels anymore. None of them have steering wheels anymore. They might not have wheels, for all I know. It might be the Jetsons here. And we just started to tap into this idea of where are bikes going. I touched on the idea of super bikes, and you kind of shot that down and said, well, I don't think they're going to be million-dollar bikes that go a million miles an hour because they're more toys, and they're designed to be simpler. And then you were kind of talking about, though, riding off-road, you know, and Brian said, what about electric bikes? So let's start there. What about electric bikes? Has that got any life to it here?
You know, I really have no clue with the electric bikes as far as the future is concerned. It's definitely very interesting. I know in the chopper world, which is where I'm mostly fascinated, there was a guy pretty recently that built one, and the coolest thing that I saw was that he could pick the whole thing up by himself. And, you know,
wow.
He told, like, Andre the Giant looking, you know, picking up a motorcycle.
Is that just because it didn't have a motor to it? I mean, it didn't have a big gas?
It was full electric. Yeah, it was full electric, and I believe he built a lot of it out of aluminum, and it fit the part. You know, it looked beautiful. One of the first, like, classically designed electric style bikes that I've ever seen. And I think with that stuff, there's definitely an opening to the idea. And I think as the younger generations get, you know, into being able to ride, they might see a market there.
Well, and you brought up the use that I thought was intriguing. You said you like to ride dirt bikes in your backyard. Your neighbors are always kind of, you know, grinding their teeth and saying, well, he's a good guy. I guess we'll let this noisy lawnmower race around the neighborhood for a while here. But an electric bike might be quiet, less polluting. People are worried about the impact of off-road vehicles in parks and other sorts of things. Maybe there's some hope at that. Maybe it allows people more access because it's quieter and more environmentally friendly. Let's put it that way.
At the same time, it does. But Chad, I really want to hear you tell people about that, what you just started on, which was really exciting about the sound and what it does to you. Talk a bit about that.
Yes.
What's missing in an electric bike? Why?
I mean, you the classic Harley Davidson potato, 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 potato.
That's the sound it makes, doesn't it? I never thought of that. Yeah.
It really is. And it's such a noise that they've actually trademarked it, I believe. They tried to sue Honda over making a bike that sounded too much like their bike.
Oh, my God. I had no idea.
It was what it was. But you can close your eyes, cover your ears, and the noise still feels inside. And I think that's where, you know, squeeze a drill and it doesn't really do anything for you, but rev a motorcycle and you just kind of are amazed at everything working together and all these weird noises.
Everybody I know that owns a Harley, they want it to be loud ass hog. They don't want it to be quiet. You know, that's the reason they get it. Born to be wild.
And, you know, I think it's such a great area to touch on, Chad, if I can just for a second to
spin
off that. When, you know, in automotive, we deal with the exact same thing. Because so much of the industry is going towards electric and so much of it's going towards self-driving, the one of the first things I hear people say is, but I like to drive. Driving is something I enjoy doing. If you take that away from me, it's not going to be nearly as fun. And so there's something there about the look and feel of a vehicle, you know, whether it's a motorcycle or a car, when it's in your hands and you're controlling it, it's a wonderful feeling versus just this sort of passiveness. Wouldn't you say, Chad?
Absolutely. It's, to me, it's everything. You know, when you fire up a different bike, I hear them going down the road, and I can almost picture what motorcycle it is just based off of the noise. And, you know, in a mall parking lot and an electric vehicle drives by, there's zero feeling other than, where'd that thing come from?
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm.
Can I give you a strange example? We had somebody in here. There's obviously a Long Beach Grand Prix on the Grand Prix circuit. There's, I don't know how many Grand Prix are left around the country where they bring these indie-style vehicles in, and our Grand Prix style racing cars in. And there was a big push a couple years ago to do an electric version of the Grand Prix, Indy cars. And big money. Richard Branson sponsored a team. Leonardo DiCaprio sponsored a team. And they thought, this is the future. Electric Indy cars or whatever. And it was a total flop because the car made no noise. And when people raced by, who wants to watch a bunch of guys zip around the track quietly? They totally missed what you guys said.
Yeah, you know, even years ago I was on that reality TV show and one of the Motor City Masters, and we had to go learn about NASCARs to build a NASCAR for one episode. And the thing that just stood with me the whole day was when we were in the pits at NASCAR, it wasn't even so much the sound you heard with your ears, it's how it felt in your feet.
Oh, yeah.
It just planted you, and you were there. And I was like, my brother and I are so different in the sense that I was never really into the machine of things. I was more into the beauty of machines,
right?
And so, but in that moment, it was an epiphany for me because I was like, this is what that feeling of a machine is all about. It's vibrating my chest and my feet,
yes,
coming through the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you feel that, Chad. You know, you've just sort of always felt that. I mean, I can think of you as a little kid running around the backyard on a quad sport that like somehow was souped up, you know, like a little children's toy that went faster somehow, flying around. And you always had that. Yeah.
Gremlin that you discarded.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing that I loved was the V8 noise.
The Gremlin you discarded.
It was a V8, and all I could do was wanted to go out and just turn it on and listen to it
and feel it, and like, feel, because with that it rumbles. Yeah, it vibrates. It you feel a certain power over it. It's like I've never been a gun enthusiast, but I had a brother-in-law for a number of years. Who finally left the family, but he was a real gun nut, and he took me out once and let me shoot a Thompson machine gun in the woods. I get why people are into this stuff. It's a feeling of power. Watching, pulling that trigger and listening to that sound, watching things explode all around you. I hate to say it. I had kind of a sick kind of like, hey, this is cool. I felt like Rambo for a moment here.
Yeah. Anyway, it's funny how technology moves on and away from that. I was driving a stick shift car the other day, a brand new one. Still had a manual transmission, and I was like, this is awesome, it's a manual transmission. And I forgot to put in the clutch at the stoplight.
Oh.
And the damn thing did it for me.
Oh.
I was like, wait a minute, who's the man behind the mask?
Yeah.
Like, it was just there to placate me. But I tell you what, that tells you that an entire car company is aware of that people's desire for that connection, and that is probably not going anywhere.
My wife always, up until a few cars ago, always insisted on having a stick shift because she felt it just put her in more control. She felt in control of that vehicle. And I said, well, what do you want to go out?
Control.
Yeah, I said, what do you want to go out and go back to the crank in the front here, like on a Model T? We could do that, too, if you want to go to that effort and crank, turn it over and stuff. I mean, we don't have to do that. I always wonder why motorcycles still shift. Why can't I have an automatic motorcycle?
Oh, yeah, well, take the fun out of it.
I think they do. Yeah, take the fun. Chad, do they do a lot of anti-lock brakes in bikes, or is the trend to be more manual away from that in the bikes that you build, et cetera?
The newer ones are still manual clutch, manual shifting, but I believe that, I don't know if it's standard on all of them. I've never even remotely purchased a new bike, but I do know that they have a lot of ABS going on, especially in Harleys and like Honda Goldwings and stuff like that. And I'm not opposed to an anti-lock brake system. I try to hide everything, so for that matter, I don't want it. But as far as rider safety, you lock up a brake and you're pretty much going to go on the ground, especially a front brake. So
yeah, it's going to flip you right over, flip the bike over. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that being good.
Well, it's a fascinating thing, right? Because if, you know, people, when I'm, you know, working in this world of autonomous driving, the feedback I always get is, oh, I don't want a self-driving car, but I always cite anti-lock brakes. I said, you already have one. Because an anti-lock brake is an automated system, right? Because it's pulsating the brake faster than any human can do.
Yeah, right.
So what you're really doing is you're really giving over the control of the vehicle to the computer, but you still have the perception of control. And I think that because people, that's such an important qualifier, the perception of control, right, is that, that as these things become more automated in the industrial, in the automotive realm, I almost see a growing desire for things that are not perceived to be automated, like the bikes that Chad is building for individual clients, because if you take so much of that away, where are you going to get that need satisfied?
Yeah.
And so I think, like,
interesting,
it's brilliant that Chad's, like, doing more of these bikes. You know, he makes his money as a welder doing huge turbines and nuclear power plants, but I really think there's a growing need for the kind of work that Chad is doing that's very artistic and focused on an individual person.
So I guess you answered my question already here. Will we ever see self-driving bikes? No, because it takes, it would take, if it is the fun of the and the feeling of control, it would take all that away.
Absolutely.
What do you think, Chad?
I don't think we'll see self-riding or anything like that. Maybe more of like miniature four-wheeler, like single-person vehicles might kind of come up as more of a motorcycle feel for someone who doesn't ride. But if you ride, you don't want it to be held up by itself. You don't want it.
What about an entry-level bike, though? Because this is going to sound crazy. I've never ridden a motorcycle. I've always been afraid of them. and so I've always felt they would fall over, or I'd get in a car crash or accident too easy. So what if I had an avoidance system? What if I had a balancing system that would make it easier for me to get started? I'd still have to shift it, maybe.
Yeah, no, that would be an interesting market to open up for newer riders, absolutely. But, I mean, regardless, you're still on a vehicle. You know, you're sitting on top of a vehicle. You're still
You got your legs wrapped around a motor. That's all I could picture here.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the best description of a motorcycle, though, is that I've heard is when you are in a car, you're watching a movie, and when you're on a motorcycle, you're in the movie.
I like that.
It's a very, very surreal experience. You smell, you hear, you know, you get rained on. Everything is right there.
Bugs hit you in the face. Yeah, all sorts of stuff happens, right?
You know, but then when you're in a car, you know, the noises are dumbed down. The AC's kind of clearing out a lot of.
And it's passing by you. You're not passing through the space. It's passing by you. It's like sitting in a movie theater.
You know, if a bike that held itself up got someone into that and interested in that, it's absolutely a cool thing, you know. But once you get into it, then you know, you're just riding a motorcycle regardless. So,
and I can see a lot of on the flip side of all that, I can see a lot of startups playing in that field of two and three wheeled vehicles that are self driving because there are less requirements. The minute you put that fourth wheel on the tarmac, you are held accountable for a whole host of requirements that a technical motorcycle, meaning two or three wheeled vehicle, does not have to meet. So there's a liberation there. So I could see, you know, that maybe they become delivery vehicles or something like that. That is kind of like a motorcycle.
Well, and people, that would be the every person vehicle. I forgot the name of it, but there was a car out of Alabama or Georgia. It's not a car. It's a three wheeled something. I can't remember the name of it, but they brought one by here one day they were trying to get up interest in them. And they had a factory built, and they were, I don't know, whatever happened, they were going to crank them out. But there's a number of companies doing that, because if it's less than four wheels, it's a motorcycle. So you have less, you don't have to have the bumpers, you don't have to have the safety, you don't have to have all these other requirements that make cars so expensive. You can get by in them, and they claim they could sell these things for like $10,000 or something.
There you go.
You know, something like that, you know, an everyman vehicle. It's a two-person everyman vehicle.
Right.
Chad,
that's interesting.
One of the things I'd love to hear you talk about. Oh, I just wanted to say that one of the things I love to hear my brother talk about, because part of the point of this podcast is design and inspiration and how people stay inspired.
Yeah, right.
And I'd love to shift the conversation to this. When anybody works for a large corporation, they work for somebody, it's such a different world to live in than when you work for yourself. And I, you know, after 10 years at Nissan, as much fun as I had, and I absolutely am so grateful for my time at Nissan, I started to have that feeling of, oh my God, how can I sketch another, you know, Cube or Altima or something? I just can't go in and do this anymore. And it kind of happened the day that they gave us laptop computers. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, we can work at home? So why do I need to come into the studio anymore? And that sort of gave me the epiphany to work for myself. But leaving Nissan was one of the scariest and then most rewarding decisions I ever made. And I'd love to hear, because I now work for myself and the income stops unless I go get it. But I'd love to hear Chad talk about that as well, because he's worked in both environments and he's growing this business of his bike manufacturing. And tell me, Chad, like, I'd love to hear, like, what are you, a different person? Are you wearing a different hat when you go into work as a millwright versus when you're building the bikes? What are the things that drive you to create this business of your own?
Well, I have to travel for work, and I absolutely love the adventures, but, you know, we just had a baby recently, and my whole focus is now getting home. So it's definitely a very tough thing to love your career, but know that your time's numbered with it. But as far as a different hat, I'm just really starting to focus on trying to turn this into more of a money-making venture. I think the fact that I make my money outside of this has been beautiful until now, but now it's almost, I don't have that do or die mentality. I can sit and think about a piece for days and not have a customer, you know, mad at me or anyone. Mm-hmm. No one cares, because it's not very much money focused, and it's kind of going that way. And I'm a little nervous, to be honest with you, about it, because I like the idea that I can take 3 or 4 days on one little part. But then, you know, because I make my money elsewhere, nothing is do or die. I kind of just laissez-faire it, you know.
Talk a bit about being nervous, because I think that's the thing. I hear, so one of the points of this podcast is to inspire people to create their dream in design. And one of the things I always hear is, oh, I would leave, but. Oh, but that's scary because. And yet, some people still do it, and some people don't do it. And what is it that makes you nervous, but you're doing it anyway?
Well, I mean, it's the end game. You know, I want to work for myself. I want to call the shots. I want to be financially independent. And, you know, having a salary cap at a big corporation, as nice as it is for the last 10 years to have a fairly steady income and whatnot, to be able to walk out into my shop and to know that I have clients coming to me for needs and that I'm fulfilling them, it's a very rewarding aspect, even if the money is not the same. I would be much happier doing what I'm doing in my shop for half the money than being gone, you know, doing what I do. But it's holding me back right now, honestly. I make good money. I travel 6 to 10 months out of the year, and I make really solid money. It's very much holding me back because, you know, I've been off work with the baby now, with having the baby for 4 months. And I'm just now getting a lot of business. You know, I'm just, like, within the last month, I've had, you know, a lot of call for, hey, can you do this? Hey, can you do that? Like, yeah, but I'm leaving, you know. So it's kind of getting in the way now, and it's a good thing. It's a very good problem. But speaking of nervous, it's just, you know, I just got to bite the bullet sooner or later, and I think that make or break mentality will solve a lot of the issues.
Would you guys ever collaborate? Would Brian design and you build?
Well, I think it would be a collaboration of both design. Yeah, right. I mean, the thing is, because my brother is a designer at heart as well. He's a designer who builds, whereas I'm a designer who draws.
Okay.
Like I like standing around. Like I draw something that's supposed to be, you know, 15, 20 years are out, and then I work with a bunch of people who then do it, and that's their expertise to make it. But those people are typically modelers and builders, and then I kind of stand around with a cappuccino with one hand and point to the other and say, you know, up, down, and then like, yes, you can fit that radiator in there. And then only, like, if they go home, if they tell me they can't fit the radiator, but they go home at 5, then I get involved with the clay and, like, just do it myself, and then it's too late, and they get pissed off that we make it the way I wanted. Whereas my brother, his skill set is really guided by – he thinks of it and he does it. He's literally he's kind of a one. He can do it all, and that's I think what he was saying is fascinating, because while it's scary, you're so Chad. I know, I feel where you're at, and I think a lot of people listening to this would feel where you're at. It's you're in that transitional period where everything is happening at once, but nothing is happening yet at full speed, because you're pulling back and you're pushing forward. You know, foot's on the brake, foot's on the gas, right? But I think people like to hear those stories because you keep going, you keep pushing it, and eventually this will be your full-time endeavor. As I was saying in the previous podcast, Paul, you know, for me, the thing that keeps me up at night is it's like flying this airplane that perpetually runs out of gas, you know, because the paycheck doesn't keep coming, right? And so, like, and when sometimes I have a lot of paychecks coming in, there's a lot of fuel in the tank, but sometimes it's coasting, right? And it just kind of descends down. And I think that's the thing that not only is always going to be the anxiety when you're working for yourself, but the reward is that moment when the plane gets fueled again, right, Chad?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We had a business coach in here the other day. I'll just throw this out, another analogy. And he said, you know, people finally leave corporate America and they go build their dream. They start their company. They open a store, whatever it is. And he said, the frustration is the right away. He said, think of this. Think of it if you were a farmer and you plant a seed in the ground and it starts to, the shoot starts to come up. What if, well, how would it help if you went out there every day and screened it and said, why aren't you feeding my whole family? Why are you just one little plant right now here? It's time.
Yeah.
It takes time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, talk about like your work, because you know what you think.
We're almost out of time here, so we'll have to make it quick here.
Okay.
All right. Well, let him. I think he could finish with this: is that he's talk about like growing one while doing the other, so that you don't just jump into a, you know, an unplanted field, if you will.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. I'm super fortunate to have a career that is, you know, corporate based, I guess, but I have a lot of freedom being a union guy, so I can kind of pick and choose jobs and my schedule. But I'm also fortunate that when I do make the jump, I'm not really in debt. All of my tools I've been building over time. You know, I've had my own shop up and running for almost seven years, and it's, you know, look at it now, you'd think it would be like 100 years old, but you know, 6 years ago, it was like one tool, you know, and I'm fortunate to grow with ease and not need to so much. But
you didn't have to go out and borrow a bunch of money to build a shop tomorrow here. You've been accumulating it over time here. Well, that makes sense.
Then you run around with your head cut off just doing every job that comes your way. I can kind of pick and choose. I don't want customers. I want clients, and clients come to you because of your knowledge, not their needs as much.
So if a client wants to come to you, how do they find you?
The Manduzel on Instagram, and all my other stuff is right there from there.
The Manduzel. For those that didn't hear, you can go back and listen to the first show. You can come up with why you came up with this crazy name, The Manduzel. And Brian, how do they reach you?
With my name, which is just Brian S. Thompson, B-R-Y-A-N-S, like Scott Thompson, on all social media platforms. It's always the same. I wasn't as creative as my brother in coming up with
it. Manduzel Senior, right over. Well, I appreciate you guys coming in here. And if anybody wants, I did look it up while we were talking. The company that came by is called Elio, E-L-I-O. They're still trying to get this thing off the ground and going. It says on their website they got 65,000 reservations for this three-wheeled vehicle, which I was wrong. The target price could be $7,500. It's supposed to be the ultimate commuter vehicle. So go check that out. It's somewhere in between what one brother's doing and the other brother's doing. It's a whole other direction here. So many different directions to pursue in what I always thought was a pretty staid and steady business, which is transportation. It's now taking off in ways I could never have imagined. I thank you guys for sharing what you guys are doing and the inspiration for both of you going in such, in some ways, totally separate directions and in some ways, similar directions. That's what's fascinating about it.
We inspire each other, for sure. I'm always inspired by my brother.
All right. Well, I'm inspired to hear more. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks.
I hope you're inspired to come back as I am here for Driven by Design. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.